Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for joining in on this conversation about being intentionally inclusive. My name is Tracy Brown, and I'm the founder of Stained Glass Spirit. And it is really an exciting occurrence to be having this series of candid conversations about diversity and inclusion in spiritual communities, because I get to talk to so many different people. And there's a lot of conversation about diversity and sometimes inclusion in the world at large, definitely in political conversations and in a lot of things that happen in current events. But we don't often get the opportunity to focus in on what does diversity have to offer in our growing and maintaining our spiritual communities, and what are some things that we can do in spiritual community that really links inclusion with our commitment to living in oneness and living as representatives of God's love. So this entire series will focus almost totally on faith communities, with a heavy emphasis and focus on New Thought spiritual communities. If you've not visited stainedglassspirit.net, then I would invite you to hang out there, stop by a couple times a week and look at the blog posts. What we post there are links to either examples of communities that are in a positive way approaching diversity and inclusion, or we post links that are information, tips, resources that might be helpful for you if in your community you want to have positive and proactive conversations about diversity. One thing that I think you'll notice is that while we don't shy away from having discussions about some of the conflict that comes from diversity or results when there is a lot of diversity in a group, we don't focus on the conflict. We focus instead on the fact that the diversity that exists in humanity is not an accident. It is a part of the divine design, that if each one of us has been made in the spiritual image and likeness of God, then there are no mistakes. And the fact that we have different cultures, we speak different languages, and all of us have different experiences, is simply a way to experience and to explore and to be grateful for the unlimited creativity of God. So that's kind of a little background on intentionally inclusive. I hope that you will join us and tell other people about it every Monday afternoon from 3:30 to 4:30 Central Time. And again, information and updates about who the different guests are will be available at stainedglassspirit.net under the tab Intentionally Inclusive. But today, I am very, very happy that Crystal Davis agreed to join me and have a conversation about being inclusive. And we're going to focus a lot on being inclusive in our community service efforts and in our interactions with different communities. But that's not all we're going to talk about. So let me tell you just a little bit about Crystal, and then I'll invite her in to share a little bit more about her background. Crystal Davis is an amazing woman and a fabulous mom to a great son. And I could really stop there, except that you'd probably be asking, yeah, so that's great, but why'd you ask her to talk about community service and diversity and inclusion? So Crystal is all but dissertation. I mean, she is like so close as we are going to be having this conversation. You know, in a few months, I'll be able to say Dr. Crystal Davis.
Wow.
But Crystal's working on her doctorate in management and organizational leadership from the University of Phoenix and will soon have completed her studies as she is working on her research and dissertation right now. She's also been someone who has had a lot of success working with spiritual communities and churches as they develop and implement their community service initiatives. And so we'll be talking a little bit. We'll spend a little bit of time having her share some information about what she's done and how she helps churches align their mission with the service they want to do out in the community. And she has done that not only with Centers for Spiritual Living, but with some other communities as well. Crystal serves on the Laity Council for Centers for Spiritual Living, and that is just one of the many ways that she models what she talks about when she talks about servant leadership, because she herself not just academically knows about servant leadership, but she serves as an example of servant leadership in the communities that she's involved in. So that's a little about Crystal. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you so much, Tracy, for having me at your inaugural conversation of being intentionally inclusive. I'm very excited about the opportunity to have a great conversation around inclusiveness and my work with churches and servant leadership. So thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm going to ask you to just cut your volume a tiny bit. We're not getting echo, but I'm getting a little bit of a buzz. So I think if you bring your volume down a notch, that would help. And yes, talk so we can see if that's true.
Okay. Does that sound better?
Just a little bit. Maybe you can take it down a little bit more. And if not, it might be on my end that my volume might be up just a little too high.
So. Okay. I've taken that down pretty low. So.
Okay. And you can still hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Then let me make an adjustment on this and take my volume down a little bit. And I think we are all good. So you know this, but anyone who listens to this, who's listening now or who listens to the recording, I want them to also be aware of this. So the idea of these conversations is that if you're listening in, it's almost like you're listening candidly, you know, eavesdropping almost on a conversation versus us setting this up as a class or as a presentation. And so every week I'll be, you know, bringing in people with different perceptions and different perspectives and different experiences that apply to working with volunteers or developing staff in churches or actually creating inclusive worship experiences. We'll be touching every aspect of running a church or being a church and how diversity is related to that. So it's we could have picked anywhere to start, and community service is as good a place as any. So, so Crystal, I gave a snapshot of some highlights of your background. Is there anything else you want people to know about you? And then where would you like to start this conversation?
Well, thank you, Tracy. And no, I think you did an excellent job kind of the snapshot of the fun I have in talking about and building community outreach ministries for churches, New Thought as well as other traditional faith-based churches. And it all started about 18 years ago. My former career consisted of working at the university level in student services. And so those grant-funded programs that were and that are administered to universities and colleges across the United States look specifically at helping low-income first-generation students to helping them in basically navigating the collegiate experience. So I, in my former years, was able to learn a lot about grant writing and administering grants that help students on the college level to navigate and to understand the college process from admissions through graduation. And so was able to administer several million-dollar grants at several universities in the Midwest and in the southern United States, helping students across the country to do that. And that in and of itself also brought me to my interest, you know, in compassion, in service, and in reaching out to the community. So that was the springboard from where I started and the work I would do thereafter until today, currently. So I enjoyed that work and kind of has shifted in the last few years to nonprofit work.
I love that because it is a good foundation with a lot of structure and a lot of formal exposure to systems and processes that have an impact on a target group. And then to be able to bring that into spiritual communities that are trying to have a positive impact in with the communities in which they are based or the communities, target communities they want to serve is a pretty powerful thing. And what my observation has been, and this is not scientific, and I don't have any data to back it up, but my personal observation has been that often when churches do quote-unquote community service, there are a couple of things that seem to be predominant, not everywhere and not always, but predominant. One, oh, it's part of our charity to, you know, we've got to go help these people in this part of town that don't have what we have. Or number two, you know, the evangelism, they don't have what we have because they don't know what we know, and so we've got to convert them or, you know, bring them to the light. And then third, the people who are organizing it and coordinating it have good hearts, but they don't necessarily understand the dynamics or the systems that you might need to put into place to actually really have a long-lasting impact. And then the fourth thing for me is specifically related to diversity and inclusion in terms of, you know, then we go out into neighborhoods or into the neighborhood our church is in, and we completely miss the need because, or the need or the impact we can have because we don't understand that we're coming across as condescending or we're just not able to communicate because of language or age differences.
Yes, that is really excellent, Tracy, and a bit of truth for you here. I just want to kind of interject this. You know, my opportunities for growth over the years in, you know, church work and nonprofit work and community outreach, I kind of started out with that evangelism that they don't know what we know and we need to help them, and kind of this sense and consciousness of charity. And that has definitely over the years shifted dramatically, almost a 360, from understanding, you know, the differences between charity as a handout rather than a hand up. And, you know, I think Spirit afforded me a couple of opportunities over the last years to kind of evolve from that consciousness to really understanding the concepts of servant leadership and the concepts of community outreach as it relates to empowering people rather than making them feel like they are just receiving help at just one stop and then it goes no further. So I will say that that's that consciousness, and I'm grateful for the years of service that have brought me to this point where I understand it now. From a more evolved, you know, consciousness about when you work with and help people in outreach in your community.
So, you know, I don't mean to give charity a bad name because charity is great, and our spiritual texts and guidebooks often refer to, you know, charity as important, and charity is a key tenet of many religions. But yes. In a sense of empowerment, like you said, a hand up versus a handout, and without judgment of the people who are receiving it. But you mentioned servant leadership, and I'm not sure everybody knows what that means. So how about the 3-minute primer on Greenleaf and servant leadership?
Great. Well, I will say that I have been a servant leader, and I don't think I could have said that before 2010, all of my life. And as I started the doctoral program at the University of Phoenix, of course, I got to put some context to that and some theories about servant leadership. And so one of my main interests, along with learning, you know, a plethora of other leadership theories in this program, this servant leadership really resonated with me at the core, Tracy, because I really got into Robert Greenleaf and his theory of servant leadership. And it's basically that the servant leader is really servant first. It's an innate feeling and a calling to serve. And Robert Greenleaf says it as such. It begins with like a natural feeling that one wants to serve and to serve first. And then a conscious choice from this person aspires them to lead. So they move from a consciousness of service and then leadership. And we talk about the sharp differences between a person who is a leader first, and that is perhaps a person who wants to gain power or acquire material possessions or have control over their followers. And the servant first and the leader first are actually two different extremes. And there are shadings and blends of the leader, of this type of leadership in almost every variety of human nature, in corporations, in the nonprofit sector, and in church and faith-based organizations. But the key difference, Tracy, in servant leadership is, does the difference manifest itself in the care taken by the servant, first to make sure that other people's highest priorities and needs are being served? And the best test that we have discussed and that Robert Greenleaf kind of bases servant leadership on is question number one, do those who are served grow as persons? Question number two, do they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, and more likely to become servants themselves? And then finally, what is the effect of servant leadership on the least privileged in our society? Will they benefit or at least not be further deprived? So the servant leader focuses, you know, primarily on the growth and well-being of their followers and of the people and the communities to which they belong. And so this was very interesting to me as I thought about my life's work and always having kind of this inward feeling to serve. And I'll say that, you know, it started probably from my mother, my twin sister and I growing up in the African-American Baptist Church and having been quite involved in the church on many levels and watching my mother be a servant leader and serve as a cook in the kitchen for more than 30 years at our local church. And so servant leaders can be found everywhere, Tracy, in the kitchen, to the ushers, to those who clean the building, to the ministers, practitioners, and the lay leaders. So it's just this innate feeling that you want to serve first, so much so that in that position, the people will say to benefit themselves, that is a servant leader.
I love that because it is the reminder that leadership is not necessarily defined by a title.
Yes.
And when we talk about diversity and inclusion, one of the things that I often find myself talking about is that, you know, when you are in a multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-generational setting, whether it's your church or your community or, you know, your neighborhood association or just being in the world, that leadership can come from the most unexpected person given the opportunity to express himself or to contribute ideas or suggestions. And so that servant leadership definition and explanation that you gave, you know, reminded me that that's really when we are acting in a way that's inclusive, we really do recognize that leadership comes from lots of different places, not just the person with the title that you would expect to be the leader.
Yes, Tracy, that is true. And, you know, in addition to that, when we think about leadership and inclusiveness, it's about it largely like from person to person. And Robert Greenlee took that a step further when he wrote the book, The Institution as Servant, where he then evolved his servant leadership from person to person, where it can be now mediated through institutions. And as we are talking about church institutions, corporations, your communities, your neighborhood communities. And he talked about the often more, the larger, complex, more powerful organizations that may be a bit impersonal, and sometimes corrupt, but that servant leadership is also just a creative opportunity for people in institutions to raise the capacity, you know, to serve and to raise the capacity of performance as a servant leader by new and, you know, regenerative forces. So I think it's important that we understand servant leadership from a person-to-person perspective, but then also in the 21st century, understanding servant leadership from an institutional perspective.
Yes. Yes. So with that perspective about servant leadership, and I'm really glad we took a couple of minutes, a few minutes to do that, because not everyone is familiar with Robert Greenlee or any of the writing that has come since he began to write about this and use that label. Let's go to, oh, I've got four places I want to go. Let's see, where do I want to go first? Okay, let's talk a little bit about one or two of the projects or programs you're most proud of, and then we'll, you know, kind of go back and pull them apart a little bit with how did diversity either help or create a barrier. But just describe some of the things that you've done, especially with churches, and that'll give give us a framework from which to dig a little deeper.
Okay, great. Well, I've worked with several churches, and of course on this call I mainly like to talk about, although I'm open to talk about all of them, but my work at Centers for Spiritual Living in Kansas City in the community outreach ministry. You know, when I arrived there more than 7 years ago, there was the community outreach program slimly operating. But over the last 5 years, we've been able to build that ministry and build systems and processes for launching that community outreach ministry forward. So, you know, it began by creating a mission statement, aligning the program and the ministry to the CSL core values, one of which is service. And then developing a volunteer's oath around that. You know, we started off by calling it selfless service. And sometimes I think it's also important the language we use around inclusiveness, you know, diversity and community outreach. And so over the last years, we've kind of shifted to sacred service because of the sacredness of language and how sacred service really helps to connect selfless service to the heart. And so I think our program was able to build and evolve further and further towards grasping the volunteer's heart for their talents and skills and what they could bring to our service project. And so that was a twofold advantage for us, Tracy, because it helped the volunteers within our CSL community. And then it helped us to launch from our community into the greater Kansas City metro area. So it was wonderful how that worked out. And over the last 5 years, you know, we've done several projects, completed several selfless service project, you know, being able to connect with 26 different organizations over the last 5 years, and then to collaborate with 16 organizations where we help to underscore the services and activities and events that they provide for the Kansas City area. And so if I had to pick two of our service projects that I, you know, think had really great impact and created value for the Kansas City community, it was one workshop we did called Healthy Body, Healthy Mind. And it mm-hmm. was a workshop, an afternoon workshop that we conducted with the domestic violence shelter in Kansas City. And we worked with some of our practitioners and some of our women in the CSL community that worked with women on a healthy mind, positive thinking, positive thought. One of our practitioners, Jane, even gave a small 20-minute discussion on affirmative prayers and brought examples for the ladies to look at in terms of writing their own treatment around situations that they were praying about and, you know, wanting to improve. And then we have one of our women, Amira Harper, who's a holistic chef, make lunch for the ladies. So we intertwine, you know, this healthy mind and healthy thoughts, positive affirmations, learning how to write a treatment, along with learning how to be, live, and eat healthy. And so the women were very excited about the lunch, and many of us have had Mars cooking over the years, so we knew it would be a treat for those ladies. And mm-hmm. I'll tell you, when we ended that workshop, it was wonderful, Tracy, the evaluations that we received and how empowered the ladies felt. And I mean, immediately they were asking, when were we going to be able to come back to the center and talk with them, you know, engage with them, and just be available and be resources and just show love. And so that was a great opportunity where I think we were able to, you know, Tracy, you don't have to say science of mind or religious science to teach it, because you can just be it. And I think that's one of the things that kind of resonated with us in our community outreach ministry. You don't have to necessarily say we're teaching science of mind or we're teaching religious science principles, but just being the people we are, being encouraging, being loving, people feel that and they feel the authenticity of that. And I think this workshop that we did really helped to drive that message home. And then, you know, one of the other projects that we were really excited about is the World Day of Service. And as you know, Reverend Michelle Senegal, one of our colleagues, spearheaded that community outreach project. And we did, we were able to recruit a lot of our volunteers at the center to help us with that. And we selected an organization that we've been working with for many years now in Kansas City called Project Uplift. And they work with what we know as the homeless. You know, they had new language for that, and they referred to them as outside dwellers. And so we worked with the people and the animals that are considered, you know, outside dwellers in bringing warm meals, and food and clothing, and, you know, inspirational conversation and just love to that project. And we were able to do that project on that Saturday and have 35 people show up from CSL and some of our CSL congregants, some of their friends and family showed up on that Saturday. And we had an overwhelming amount of people there to help kind of organize and clean the warehouse that Project Uplift operates from, but then also to send a lot more people on the three trucks they have that go out on three different routes in the Kansas City metro area, feeding the homeless as well as the animals, and just providing a listening ear and being available. So there's so many I could talk about, Tracy, but these are two that are really close to my heart. And Project Uplift also provided us the opportunity to teach inclusiveness, which is, this is a great topic that we are talking about today, to our youth. As you know, my son also participates in Project Uplift, and he got his basketball friends to come a couple of Saturdays with us. So when we talk about inclusiveness, I mean, it is so important that we have our young people understand early what inclusiveness means, you know, what diversity means, and what respecting, you know, other cultures, other ethnicities, and not so much tolerating. Because Elijah had, some things at school where he came back and they were talking about diversity, and he's like, well, Mom, we just have to tolerate other people. And I said, no, Elijah, it goes a little bit further than that. So, you know, shifting and having our young people understand it's not about tolerance, but acceptance, and understanding that we're all one, but not all the same.
Right, and that, you know, it's such a fine line to walk, because most people, most of the time, who use the word tolerance or tolerate have good intentions.
Yes.
And are not aware that really, no, that's not enough, and that in some ways that mindset can be very insulting and offensive, that you're simply tolerating someone instead of truly accepting that along the spectrum of what is normal, that, you know, in their community or in their experience, they are normal, or if it's a situation where they are in experiencing challenges in their life, they're not less than. And, you know, and yes, that we are all a part of the one, even though we're not the same. And, yeah, it's much more than tolerance. I also love the mention of involving, you know, our young people, because if we lay the foundation at a young age, it just becomes natural, like it did for you, noticing and being exposed to your mom's example. And I know that's true for me. I grew up in both the church and a community where both of my parents were very involved in volunteering and being involved in a wide variety of things with a lot of different types of people. And so I think it's Marion Wright Edelman who has a quote that goes something like, service is the rent we pay for being alive. And it's that's a loose paraphrase, but the idea that, you know, we're in this world, we have a responsibility to pay back and to be of service to others.
Yes, that is a beautiful, beautiful quote, and I think that it's so apropos to our conversation, because, and you're right, as I grew up, and I want to say, I think one of the advantages of living in Junction City, Kansas, growing up in this small little rural town in the middle of Kansas, is that we had the Fort Raleigh. So we had a military base that was literally like 3 miles from my parents' home. So our elementary school, the high school, and then the junior high school was pretty diverse because of the influx of the military. And I don't know if, you know, many people know much history about Fort Raleigh, Kansas, but the big one was stationed in Germany. It was here in Fort Raleigh for many years, and then it moved and stationed back in Germany. And then a few years ago, it came back to Fort Raleigh. So that brought an influx again of about 50,000 people back to this small area. And that really allowed for, well, some very positive things and, you know, sometimes not so positive. But one of the positive things is that the high school was so integrated with every type of ethnicity and background and culture that you might imagine. And go figure that it would be in a little town, right, in Kansas. But I think that, along with kind of my parents' upbringing and us kind of being a mixed melting pot, our family of people, you know, my dad's Italian, my mom's African-American, and so that dynamic in our family and then the diversity in the community, And then more than that, I think at the collegiate level, in my undergraduate years, I was really fortunate, Tracy, to be a Pilford Fellow at Kansas State University. And one of the things we did, amongst many, is to develop this multicultural competency model. And it's kind of what I use with Elijah, and I've used with the young people at CSL Kansas City and other, you know, young people that I'm with all the time. Elijah's in Taekwondo and basketball, and so I'm around a lot of boys all the time. But it's just a simple three-prong model. Knowledge, you know, making sure that you're aware and you understand the need that you live and work in a diverse world. Number two, your personal attributes. These are traits needed by those who live and work in a diverse world. And then number three, the skill set, the behaviors and performance tasks that are needed to live and work in a diverse world. And there's a lot of subsets under those three core areas. But, you know, it's about flexibility, respect, and empathy, cross-cultural communication, you know, teamwork, listening, language development. This is important for everyone. You know, the ability to speak and write more than one language. And then understanding your cultural self. And this is something that I think benefits everyone to live in a diverse world. So those are some tenets that I've taken with me throughout life in developing community outreach, in working with different community groups that help the less fortunate, you know, in the areas and in the cities that I've lived in over the years. And these are important, I think, just for a diverse world. And it was important at that time, too, for what the university was trying to teach the students. So I think it starts at a young age, you know, definitely continue through high school and the college years, and then into your professional and your career life. It is just something that carries you a long way in understanding and working in a global society.
Well, I'm laughing, actually, because when you made the comment about, you know, who would have thunk, or no one would assume that in the middle of Kansas,
yes,
you know, that here somebody would have this exposure to really the entire world in this, you know, rural area. And the reason I'm laughing is because, I mean, I've met a number of people who have had a lot of exposure to a broader range of people and had to learn to build cross-cultural bridges in order to be,
yes,
in school together, to be in church together, to
mm-hmm.
be in community together. But the reason it really strikes me is because, you know, what typically I hear as I travel around the country is people will say things like, oh yeah, I grew up in New York City and there's all kinds of diversity there.
Yes.
And what I experience with people who come from large cities, not just New York City, but, you know, even Chicago or Detroit or L.A. or D.C., that,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a large city, there's exposure to a wide variety of cultures, but the groups still have a lot of separation.
Yes.
Unforced separation, but separation nonetheless. So they don't really, really get to know how to live together. It's
yes.
just, oh, I know that part in town is, you know, this heavily attracted to this particular ethnic group, and this part of town, you know, if you go over there, if you want restaurants that reflect this certain ethnicity, and they're not all mixed up together like what you described. So your experience is probably, you know, more creating the cultural competence than just being exposed to visually or knowing about, just having the awareness level of diversity, especially as it relates to ethnicity and national origin.
Yes, that's it. So true, and I think that we were blessed in the sense of having such a advantage in this small community. And I was thinking about when we were in high school, two doors down, Junga and her family lived, and they were a Korean family. And so we learned about kimchi early on. Mm-hmm. And so just small examples that, you know, I can recall from childhood that I think now when I reflect back really helped us when we entered in college and then started to work in the world. How those small experiences helped us to understand and accept and appreciate and value difference, and learning new languages and understanding culture. You know, it was just amazing how so much could be compacted. But I think a lot of that also relates to kind of the close-knit of the community, Tracy. And so when you have everyone in such a close-knit, and you have to learn about their culture or you're interested, you know, in learning. I mean, Jungle brought kimchi to lunch. We loved it. We wanted to know how it was made. Her parents were really open about having us come into their home and show us how it was made. And so I think early on we weren't saying, oh, that smells bad, or oh, that's very different from what we're used to eating. But it was more about we were able to embrace it and then
right.
and then come to love it. So
right. and
I think that's important.
In a small community, you don't have the luxury or the option of, you know, separating as clearly as you would when you have a lot more people. So I have a couple of questions for you. One, because of the experiences you've had, what would you say to someone, let's say that you are talking with a leadership team at a center or a church, and you're there to help them with the project, help them execute a community service strategy. And there are people, as you all are talking about what they'd like to do and all of that, who are clearly in their comments judgmental about and feeling superior to the groups that they're considering helping. What advice might you have for them, if any? I don't know. It's just a question. You can say, no, let's ask a different question.
Well, no, that's interesting. And that, you know, it's something that I think any person who's working in community outreach, you know, must embrace and understand, because I think a lot of it is being unaware of that kind of superiority. And so I think helping them to understand the purpose and the goal of the community outreach and moreover, you know, just the background. For instance, we were working with community outreach on the workshop, and so some people didn't quite understand domestic violence and women and children who had to move away from their family, or, you know, men, in this particular case, move away from the men, husbands, or boyfriends because of abuse and what it was doing to them and to their children. And so we had to spend a few minutes talking about, and this is where it becomes important that you have volunteers and people who have that skill set or the background knowledge about the different areas that you may decide to work in, because domestic violence is something that happens in the community, and there's things that can be discussed so people who are unaware of it understands what happened, understands the woman who is being abused, understands why she may go back to the abuser. There's a lot of judgment, you know, around that. And so I think making people aware of what it is, whatever the need is, and how to address it, and then how to address it with compassion and empathy. And I think that's one thing that's really important, is that when you're, you know, designing service project and you're working with your volunteers in your center as well as in the community, what's the emotional intelligence, you know, level? How well do they understand the project or the dynamics around a service project that you have, and what's the background information You know, we also participated in the Kansas City AIDS Walk for a number of years. And so I think helping people also understand that AIDS, for instance, is not a gay or lesbian disease, but that it's a disease that affects everyone. So I think knowledge is key, Tracy, when you're helping people understand the service projects you're involved with and the people and kind of the background information, knowledge, and history around it so that they're more informed. And I think the more informed your volunteers are and your leadership, you know, the less apt for judgment about the situation.
Yeah, I think that was a great example, too, because, I've heard people who were volunteering, actually, not going to, but were volunteering with a shelter for women who had been abused. And, you know, they would think they were out of earshot, and they, mm-hmm. you know, would say, oh, yeah, I would never let that happen to me. And, mm-hmm. you know, I would never
with those ladies.
That.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. not, you know, forgetting for a moment that, you know, many of the women who find themselves in that situation, it was not intentional and it was not a choice. And actually, they're at the shelter because they've made a choice that it's not okay with them.
Yeah.
And so how do we connect on the level of where we can agree, I am here to help them do what they have set an intention to do.
Yes,
which
to do.
Improve
that's
their
right.
life and improve
mm-hmm.
the life and the environment for their children. And we are all about empowerment. And I am standing by your side as your partner in this journey versus I'm judging you and or I'm here to fix you because you screwed up and got yourself
yes.
into the situation. So I love that. I mean, the bigger point of what you just said for me is that point of as we create community outreach or community service projects, it's important to provide information
mm-hmm.
to our community members who are going to be involved with that group so that they understand not just the big picture scenario, but have the emotional intelligence to deal with it, understand any cultural norms that
yeah.
might be affecting people who are being served, and anticipate that they may have some judgment and provide some orientation or some training.
Yeah.
And that's really important because my experience has been that often we say, oh, we're going to do this project and we're going to go help these people. Anybody interested, sign up.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
it's like we think, because these are nice, well-intending people who sign
mm-hmm.
up, just because they're nice people, they're going to be effective anywhere they go. And that's a recipe for disaster.
It is indeed. And that's one of the reasons why, I mean, in understanding that from a community outreach perspective, that, you know, one of the things we looked at in recruiting volunteers when they first, you know, kind of say they have interest in volunteering is finding out what are their talents and skills and where they feel best, you know, that they can use their skills, their talents, their compassion, and their empathy. But for instance, you know, at CSO Kansas City, we had a large pet ministry, and we had a lot of people who were animal lovers and who would give up their time and do collections and donation drives for the animal shelters in Kansas City. Well, that group of people were really interested in that ministry and did a great job there, but many of them were not so interested in volunteering for the domestic violence or for Project Uplift that worked with the homeless. You know, they didn't feel as comfortable going out on the trucks and actually having one-on-one and interaction and close contact with the homeless people in Kansas City. So in you know, the beginning and as you're planning projects, you know, one of the things I think is quite beneficial is to assess your volunteer pool and find out, you know, what talents and what skills and what, you know, love for service that your volunteers have so they can be matched appropriately to those service projects or projects that can be birthed from what you learn about what your volunteers would love to do and how the, you know, what ways would they love to contribute. So
yeah,
this is important to cultural competence, I think, and what you're talking about, you know, this multicultural competency. Very important.
And I, as you were talking, and then you ended with that, because you triggered for me how powerful it could be if I were responsible, if I were the ministry team lead for community outreach, or if I were the minister or, you know, someone who was thinking about what can we do in our church or in our community that's related to this, it may be worthwhile to start off with that kind of inventory and a questionnaire, a survey, some way to identify what the interests and the skills are of the people in the community, and then go out and find a project or an agency or a need in the community that matches that, because then you have already a built-in match, you know, a built-in sense of interest.
Well, and that leads me right into one of the things that we have done for many years, and even prior to my coming to CSL in Kansas City. It's called the Prosperous Life Program, and talking about how we could match, you know, skills of our volunteers to the organizations in the community. Well, each year we would ask our CSL community to select three local nonprofits to support for the year with our tithes and services. So over a 6-Sunday period, we would have the community congregants drop their list of local organizations that they felt we should support, and how they aligned with our core values. And of course, as I said earlier, one of our core values is service, along with love, healing, oneness, abundance, spiritual growth, and diversity. And so after that 6-Sunday period, we would tally all those, Tracy, and then come up with the top three that got the most selections. So we were kind of really streamlining what our community thought and which local organizations, you know, they felt we should support for that year. And then we would come back again, and they would select the vote for the top three. And then we would spend that first part of the year connecting with those executive directors of those communities and of those local nonprofits, you know, so that we could collaborate, we could build community, and we could plan together. So that was another way of, as you were saying, building in the kind of sacred service projects that we wanted to do.
Okay, so that's powerful. I love that. And you listed those values. You just ticked them off. Service, love.
Healing.
Healing.
Oneness. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Healing.
Oneness.
Abundance. Spiritual growth.
And diversity, yes.
I love that. So I'm just going to go on record in this very moment and ask you to just warn Reverend Dr. Chris Michaels that I'm going to invite him to come and have a conversation about what it's like to be the spiritual director and the spiritual leader. What has he learned that has gotten you all to this point, especially, you know, having diversity listed as one of the seven values.
Oh, yes.
And then how does diversity and inclusion impact the execution of the other six? So you might
Ooh, nice.
Warn him that I'm going to be reaching out to him and inviting him to come have a conversation with me on intentionally inclusive.
Okay. That is great. Well, and those core values really, Tracy, are so wonderful. And for me, coming into New Thought and Center for Spiritual Living in Kansas City over 7 years ago, really, you know, helping to create the mission for community outreach, which really was a kind of a sub-mission of one of our core values that we had when I began, which was community. And I love that. I thought, oh my gosh, one of the core values is community. Like, I am community, right? I love outreach. And so when I thought that, it just kind of triggered something in me to want to see how I could help CSL Kansas City with their community outreach. And lo and behold, as spirit would have it, they had posted a, interest in a executive director for community outreach. And I read the, qualifications and what they were looking for, and I was really excited about that. And I was like, wow, a church that has community as a core value, and then over the years we grew into service. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is great, moving into service. And I'll tell you, service and our kind of value under service is the highest recognition of our oneness and act of spiritual maturity. Through service to others, we serve spirit. How great is that?
Yeah, that's fabulous. So I have 5 other questions, but I don't have time to ask any of them because we only have like 2 minutes remaining.
Oh, God.
So I'll give 1 minute to you for anything else you want to say, and then I'll take a minute to close this out.
I appreciate Tracy so much. And as you can see, this is such a great conversation that could, just go forward in talking about community outreach and multicultural competency. But these two are important. They're one and the same. They must both go together in any community outreach ministry that one has. And I just appreciate you and what you're doing and for having us on to talk about multicultural competency from various perspectives. And I hope that the callers enjoyed how these align with community outreach. Thank you so much, Tracy.
And thank you, Crystal. It's great, 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 just like I knew it would be. And this is just the beginning. So if you're listening and are listening to the recording, please join me on any Monday, every Monday just about, between for the next 6 months. And we'll be talking about how to be intentionally inclusive, why to be intentionally inclusive, and just give some tips and practical things for you to apply in your spiritual community. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Religious Science of Mind, said that we find ourselves not absorbed, but immersed in a universality, each one being a unique, individual, and different manifestation of that which is itself one, undivided, indivisible, and whole. And that is why we are committed to being intentionally inclusive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again soon. Have a great
afternoon.
Thank you,
Tracy. Namaste.